throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kauf with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. It's going to be quiz day today, Jared.
Quiz bowl.
Quiz bowl when it comes to NCAA tournament ratings. A lot is in the news about the ratings for this year's NCAA tournament and where it ranks historically. Not only on the men's side, but also on the women's side. We got the women's numbers yesterday. They are astounding for the women's tournament. It's crazy how many people watched that Iowa-LSU game. So now I've got some questions on historical rate. I mean, that one blew past anything a women's game has ever done. So what could be possible on Sunday in the finals? If it's Caitlin Clark and Iowa against South Carolina going for an undefeated season. We can talk about that. Purdue and UConn. I've got a list of the top 10 all-time highest-rated finals in NCAA tournament history. What do you think is the most recent that's on this list? Could Purdue, UConn maybe find its way into the top 10? Talk about that. Joe Harris playing the role of NFL owner as the president of Oklahoma threatened something that is almost astounding to think about as far as Oklahoma basketball. Final rankings for Class A and B, and actually 2A also, but nobody's really here. Baseball came out yesterday, or actually Monday afternoon, late Monday afternoon. The pairings come out Friday, and then there's some games will be played, and then within those pairings, you know, or what have you, then you kind of figure out who will play who. So we can take a look at that. District races still ongoing in the bigger classes in baseball. We can take a look at that. Thunder and Philly last night without SGA and J-Dub almost came away with what would seem to be an important win if you're wanting Oklahoma City to be the one seed. Chet played really well after struggling the last few games. I thought there was one moment in particular that kind of showed what it feels like Chet's all about. Joel Embiid came back out of nowhere. It seemed like an April Fool's thing on Monday. Then through the day yesterday, the line started changing when people figured out SGA and J-Dub weren't playing. All the rage was, is Tyrese Maxey going to play or not? And then all of a sudden you look out there and there's Joel Embiid for the first time in months. Boston tonight for the Thunder. Celtics are the best team at home in the league. I think like 32-3 or something like that. 36-3, 35-3. So where would the Thunder be with a loss or a win? And then how's it shaping up as far as the seeding as we get near the final week or so of the NBA regular season? 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, choose us a text. We can talk about any of those things, whatever else could be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, there are a couple of ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com. The other is to download the app. The app's got it all. It's got the radio stuff. It's got the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight. That's thepennynews.com. Also, of course, Big Elk and Paragon TV, when that is available. Throughout the high school season, you can watch the live streaming of sports on Big Elk and Paragon TV. And then the Skinny on Sports podcast, we do that every day. Go back and listen to the show if you weren't able to listen live. You can find that wherever podcasts may drop. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm very good.
It's warming up, thankfully. Yesterday was just kind of a little blip on the radar screen. I did hear Jimmy, Mr. Ag.
Mr. Farmer's Almanac.
Mr. Farmer's Almanac say that after yesterday morning. And now, if This is Jimmy talking, not Aaron. So if this doesn't work out for you, blame Jimmy. But I did hear him say yesterday, you are free to plant tomatoes.
Really?
I heard him say it yesterday because the 15-day forecast doesn't show anything even remotely close to freezing overnight. And then by that time, you're clear into, you know, middle to late April. And if a freeze comes, hey, that just happens. You already had them in the ground anyhow. So I did hear Jimmy say yesterday that feel free to plant your tomatoes. And I believe, speaking of the almanac, I believe the Farmer's Almanac tells you to plant them today.
Okay. So this is coming from a guy who's building a giant indoor growing facility.
Maybe he meant he could plant his inside his greenhouse. I heard him say that yesterday. Feel free to plant your tomatoes.
All right. Just tomatoes?
Well, I think that's what most people are worried about, dying from freeze.
Well, flowers aren't cheap either.
Yeah, I'm just saying. We got.
I got a feeling on the way back from Tulsa on Friday we're going to be stopping at some greenhouses to buy some flowers. I got a feeling.
We bought herbs and tomatoes and peppers two weekends ago.
You grow them at your house? Or
we've got them at the house inside. We've got them at... We bought so many that they let us take one of those, what do they call them? Like the carriers out. Uh-huh. You know how they have them stored in there?
Yeah.
They let us have one of those that was empty. And we've got a spray water bottle that was spraying water on the plants. And then also near a window so that sunlight can come in.
Okay.
Kind of grow them in there until we can transplant them out into. So we're in the process of digging up the area inside the fence, but on the south side of the pool. That's okay. Where we want to grow all this stuff.
Okay.
Because there wasn't anything there last year. There used to be a bunch of plants and stuff. Those are gone. And so that was our idea, is to plant all of our herbs and vegetables and if you want to be technical, fruit with the tomatoes there on that side of the pool. So that's our goal. 2 weeks ago on that Saturday when we did all the trimming and cutting and all that, I hauled off into the vacant lot behind us across the alley about 15 5-gallon buckets full of dirt and rock. It's pretty, it's not optimal growing soil at the moment.
Yeah.
So we need to kind of dig it out in order to then go back in with what might make those things grow. I'm sure we were both, neither one of us really thought that was possible to get done by the time we leave. Wish it was done now so we could plant today, because that's what the almanac said.
We've toyed with the idea, we got some big space out there between our house and my mother-in-law's house.
You gotta have a giant garden, is what you need.
Well, we thought about a pumpkin patch.
Mm.
And then for the kids, you know, the little ones, we just tell the school, come on down and pick your pumpkin come fall.
That's what my father-in-law would do.
We've thought about doing that. Is this about the time you do that too? Plant your pumpkins? Or is it a little bit later?
Have to ask Oompa on that one. I'm not sure when the pumpkin planting happens. Kara's listening. She could probably tell us, but apparently she's not. So
I'll give it time. I wonder if our man Jimmy would know that question. Know the answer to that question.
He would make one up if he didn't.
Probably would. And I'd believe him.
Let's see. Pumpkin plant. That's a good question. I would assume it'd be a little bit later. I mean, unless you're
trying. They grow quicker than you think.
Well, and so,
you know
unless
who
you're
we
trying,
need to ask. Well,
obviously
man, Tyler.
Yeah. But I don't think. Oh, here we go.
Is that him?
It's my wife. You plant pumpkins in July. Unless you're trying to grow one that weighs 4,000 pounds, then it's probably in the ground.
No. One that a first grader can easily pick up.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. July. I'll say, I didn't think that he planted them yet.
We've thought about it.
This is onion, pepper, tomato time.
Tomato season, yeah.
As far as the planting goes. All right, last night, Thunder in Philly without Jalen Williams, without Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. The Sixers had Joel Embiid, did not have Tyrese Maxey. Oklahoma City led essentially the entire game until it came down to the end, and guess what? Philly had their guy. Oklahoma City didn't, and Philly was able to execute down the stretch, make the shots they needed to make. Embiid was good. Also, Kelly Oubre Jr. was really good in the fourth quarter, spurring on the comeback from the Sixers down, I think, 10 going into the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. or 7 or something like that. And Philly ends up beating the Thunder 109-105. Oklahoma City had, what, 4 or 5 threes at the very end to send it in, or at least tie it, to have a chance to send it into overtime. And it was from guys that you would want shooting them, mainly Isaiah Joe, wide open, a couple of those threes that he couldn't get to go. Then Jalen Williams had one. He played a fantastic game. The only thing he didn't do well last night was shoot the three. So he got his first start this year. Career-high 12 assists, scored 6 points, but he missed the very last one. That was the difference in the game. 109-105, Philly beats the Thunder. So Oklahoma City drops back into a three-way tie in the loss column atop the Western Conference standings with Denver and Minnesota, and now they play the second night of a back-to-back in Boston, which the Celtics have just been awesome throughout the entire season, especially at home. But a really spirited effort from a really shorthanded Thunder team last night.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I didn't know that the stars for the Thunder were going to be out until I basically turned on the TV. That's how much I was paying attention yesterday. And then when I saw Embiid back, well, this might be a long night. And then when they would grow the lead up to, it was, I think, no more than 10, maybe more a little bit. But part of me thought, wow, they're going to steal one. And that's what I would call it if they were able to come away with the win. Still very happy, though, with the way those played. I was relieved to see Chet kind of get out of his funk. And Wiggins was good. Who else stood out for me? Dort. Giddey was okay. So you're seeing, you're getting, that situation was, it was not ideal to lose, obviously, because still in a race for the first. But it was, I'm always thinking, trying to be proactive of, well, some guys that didn't get a lot of minutes got a lot of minutes, meaningful minutes, and played good doing it. They took advantage of that. So, but I was wondering going in with the health of SGA, if on back-to-backs, which I don't think we have any more left.
Yeah, there's one.
One left?
Next week, too, yeah. A couple of home games.
Can you tell me which ones?
San Antonio and Sacramento, maybe?
Okay.
I'll look it up right now.
But I was wondering on back-to-backs, yeah, is he going to be sitting on one of the two? And my wife's like, well, why is he sitting this one and not tomorrow? I was like, well, tomorrow's Boston. I definitely want him for Boston. And I think,
yeah, it's interesting.
And they didn't, and I don't know, when did the injury report come out that said Embiid was off of it? You know, was that late afternoon?
When I got into the car, it was either leaving the seventh grade baseball game when it was over, going to the high school one, or leaving the high school one, going to get a little bite to eat. I flipped it on, got in the car, and Matt Pinto was talking about some less than stand-up maneuvering with the injury report that Philly, and to the point where doing this ought to get them in some sort of trouble with the league. So, and at that point, he didn't even, it was like right at the very end of what they were discussing, must have been discussing Embiid playing, and he didn't even mention, you know, he'd already said what they were, you know, that was what they were discussing, and then when I looked up, I'm like, oh my gosh, Joel Embiid's playing. No way. It was going from the seventh grade to the high school when they were discussing that right before the tip. So, yeah, there was something a little bit wonky there, at least in the opinion of Matt, that that didn't jive with what the
Which
protocols
is the
are supposed
the Thunder,
to be. Well, that's, yeah. Obviously. Obviously. But, it, I mean, out of nowhere, because on Monday he started seeing tweets, I think it was even Shams, that put out Joel Embiid targeting a return to the Thunder. And you thought, oh, okay, yeah, April Fool's, ha-ha. And then you didn't really see anything about that all throughout the day yesterday, and then voila, there he was. I thought there was one sequence I mentioned Chet kind of snapping out of it. He scored 22. There was one sequence there where I really thought you love, and Reggie Miller even said it. So he had the ball at the top of the key, got it knocked loose. Pierce, is that his name, from Philly, the backup center, dunked it on him. He stole it from him, went down. Chet tried to contest the shot, and he got dunked on, literally. It was Reed, I'm sorry. Reed is the guy that dunked on him. And they threw the ball into Chet, and he went straight back down the floor, spun away from Paul Reed, laid it in for an and one. And Reggie said, this is what you like about young guys and young teams. This team in particular, they're fearless. He's not scared to get dunked on one end. He turned it over. Some guys would have just let it happen. Instead, he's there contesting a shot, doesn't care if you dunk it on him. And then what does he do on the other end? He comes right back down the floor, goes right at the teeth of the defense, and picks up a foul, lays it in, gets an and one. I thought that was a really cool moment for him. There was another point there as the lead was dwindling, or maybe even Philly had the lead with just a couple of minutes left. The ball swung to him on the left wing, and he turned down the three, and you could see him as soon as whatever happened on the play, as it developed, the ball went out of bounds, and you could see him like grabbing his head and like making the shooting motion, like, come on, Chet, without those guys, you have to pull the trigger there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a growing experience for him in every game, but especially one without SGA and without J-Dub, where guess what? You're not the third option. You're not the fourth option. You are more than likely the first option offensively, and that's something that he'll have to grow more into, maybe even with those guys at some point, but certainly right now without them.
Yeah. Kind of go back to what I said. When we talk about this team is still growing, and when I said it was nice to see guys that come off that usually come off the bench and only give you, 12 minutes maybe. They've got more. That name escapes me. Who was on there? They had that stat last night. Was it Joe or was it Wallace? I can't remember who it was. I mean, Isaiah Joe had 28 minutes, played well.
I know.
Maybe Kendrick Williams, I think, is who they're talking. No, he only had 14 minutes. Well, somebody that they said, this guy only plays about 12 minutes a night. He's been out there well past that, and he's having –
either Jalen Williams or Wiggins.
One of the two. Yeah. I cannot remember who it was. It might be Wiggins because he had the start. But the growing thing is still happening, I think, which is exciting because here they are fighting for first place. But there's still those learning moments like Chet just had right there. But he's grown since the beginning of the season to now with what you just said. You know, a short memory, getting dunked on, who cares? Go down the other end, help your team. It's exciting. I worry though about, I don't know. Should I worry about SGA's health? I don't know. This final stretch is like keep him as healthy as possible, rest him when you can, and go at it in the playoffs. Here's when he's on the court. I mean, clearly, if he's on the court last night,
probably
win going away. But it was not because I thought, man, this we've seen them struggle without him. And I thought that, and then with the scenario of Embiid, this is not going to be a fun night, fun game, but they stayed right there, and let's say it, they probably should have won the game.
Yeah,
the rebounding was atrocious. It always is, and there's so many times towards in that fourth quarter they could not – I mean, you gave Philly an extra opportunity because they got the offensive rebound. I thought, you get your hands on that, you're wasting at least 20-plus more seconds off the clock and maybe with points.
I mean, they out-rebounded Philly.
Yeah, I know, but I mean,
not in the important
key moments. I wonder what the rebounding net. What was it in the fourth quarter?
Embiid got a really important one down there in the fourth quarter that he got fouled by Williams on that baseline jumper after an offensive rebound, and that either tied it or that might have been the first time Philly went ahead when he made those free throws right down there with a minute left or what have you. Yeah. But with him in the game, to be able to hold your own. You know, that's the truth is that's not going to be fixable right now. The one thing that I thought killed the Thunder was for the long stretch of that game, they did not turn the basketball over whatsoever. They only had like two in the first half, and through most of the third quarter, they were at four. Well, they end up at 14, and some big ones in big moments. The one I mentioned with Chet, he turned it over twice at the top of the key. Obviously, Giddey has it stolen by Embiid, and that might have been when Philly went ahead when he ran through Chet to get the foul on the other end. You know, but that's what happens in games where your primary ball handlers in the crunch time moments aren't there. Guys were put into roles that they're not necessarily accustomed to with Giddy and with Chet because SGA and Jalen Williams weren't there. You know, they're used to receiving it and moving it instead of trying to initiate offense. But all in all, you know what? It was a game that probably should have won with the way it was played. But that's the way these games are going to happen playoff-wise as well. Is, yeah, you're going to play well, but it's all going to come down to the last 3 or 4 minutes and who can execute on both ends of the floor.
What do we see year in and year out from an MVP candidate? It's not the gaudy numbers and everything. What usually puts them over the top or why they're in an MVP discussion is because in the final 2 minutes they take over and they seal the deal. That's where they missed SGA.
Yep, and that's where Embiid.
And that's where Embiid stepped
even
in.
Even the I first game back was, in months, yeah. You know, he looked exhausted at the free throw line. But yeah. Guess what? He made them all.
He made them all. And
all 12 of them.
When he went out with what 6.5 minutes, 5 minutes, something like that, and even they were questioning, well, is this it? Because is he on time restriction? Yeah. You know, and I was hoping that was it because I knew if he comes back, with 3 minutes, which I think he was about 3 minute mark, he came back and played the rest of the game. But if he comes back, he's going to take over this game, get himself to the free throw line or do whatever it takes, get those rebounds. And he did.
Yep.
He did. That's why they were chanting MVP for him. He's a long shot to get it, but it's clear how valuable he was for that team. And then and it also showed us how valuable SGA is to that team.
Yeah, in a weird way, on a night where you're on national television without him, it might bolster his case for that award. In a weird way, if you're SGA.
In a weird way, yeah.
You know, Oklahoma City wins that game if he's there. Most people would today are saying, oh, yeah, especially without J-Dub as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be a blessing in disguise that both were out, at least for SGA, because I think even if J-Dub is there, they probably win. The way that he's blossomed this season. When you look at the standings, so Oklahoma City right now, tied in the loss column. They set in third because of tiebreakers. I wonder what the three-way tiebreaker is.
Good luck.
Is it just head-to-head until – because obviously Oklahoma City owns the tiebreak against Denver.
I know what it is. They're all going to drive to a truck stop and flip,
flip a coin.
Or
is it the BCS? The BCS will break the tie between two of them or something?
Yeah, something. I'm sure I've found those rules somewhere, those tiebreakers, and there's like – 10 scenarios almost.
I know head-to-head, Oklahoma City has it to go over Denver.
Denver, yeah.
Right now, Minnesota has the head-to-head the tiebreaker over Oklahoma City because they split the season series, and right now Denver or Minnesota is 12-3 in the division where Oklahoma City is 12-4. That's the second tiebreak. Now, their last division game is another one at Denver, which they just won there the other night. So I guess we need to figure out what the third one is, if it comes down to that between Minnesota and Oklahoma City, because a Denver win puts them even in the division as well. So we'll have to figure out what that third tiebreak is. But when you look right now, would be a perfect time for the Thunder to not be the one seed. Because when you look down in the play-in standings, 7-8 is Phoenix and the Kings. Now, if the Thunder ends up third, they would play number six anyhow, so none of that really matters. But as far as the second seed, right now it would be exactly when you'd want it to happen, because that would mean that you either get Sacramento or Phoenix, because the winner of that game automatically goes into the seventh seed. It would be L.A. playing Golden State. The winner of that would play the loser of the other one, and they would get the eighth seed, which would play number one. So at this point right now, there's a possibility of Denver versus L.A. or Golden State, which is a crazy first-round series. If it's L.A., we're talking about a rematch of the Western Conference Finals a year ago. But that's going to – for the first time in just a little bit, there's actually some decent separation between 7-8 and 9-10. There's two in the loss column separating Phoenix and Sacramento from L.A., from the Lakers. Phoenix's schedule down the stretch is one of the hardest in the league, with all the games that they still have to play. But, I mean, heck, we're getting down 75, so we just got 7 games to go with a 2-game lead in the loss column. I do believe L.A. has the tiebreak over Phoenix winning the season series, so that's, you know, it doesn't like they had the extra game in their pocket. But for at least right now, in this snapshot in time, this will be, if you're a Thunder fan, where that second seed is looking really enticing because of the possible matchup coming out of that first play-in game, which means no L.A.
I'm anxious to see when that all is decided and when do they show us, okay, we're conceding to go to the 2 seed because of that, because of what's happening down low or down below them? Or does it come down to the last game of the year and they know if we win this game, we're the 1 seed? Or if it's last game of the year and they go, well, lose this game, we're automatically the 2 seed, and all of a sudden you're seeing a bunch of resting.
So the last 3.
My question is, I wonder what game that happens. You know, when does that happen?
The last 3 you've got at home. I don't put the 4th one in there because the Kings, I think, are still going to be battling. So that Kings game, I'm talking about like even the opponent. Kings are going to be playing. But then the last 3, you got Spurs. What will they have to play for at that point? The Bucks are essentially guaranteed the 2 seed in the East, and they're not catching Boston, obviously. And then the very last game is the Mavs, which that one was the one to me that is completely up in the air. Right now, Dallas is in the playoffs, not in the play-in. And I wonder if they're the one that can even manipulate it more, because if you're Oklahoma City, even if you're the 1 or the 2, you're not manipulating anything because somebody's got to win a game. You know what I mean? Whereas Dallas, inside the top 6, maybe they can try to manipulate those standings to force a matchup that they feel is favorable. And I wonder,
what takes precedent for them? A matchup that's favorable or the 4 seed where they get some home court advantage there?
Yeah. I mean, they could still be playing for that. What are they at? 2 losses behind
two
the
back.
Clippers?
Yeah.
I mean, Dallas is kind of the wild card in that, I think, at least in those last 3. Because the Kings, you would think, would want to get out of the play-in game, so they'll be playing all the way down to the end, just being 1 loss behind both Dallas and the Pelicans. So, yeah, there's a lot still. I mean, with the play-in thing is so fascinating because before – you know what all we'd be talking about? Can the Lakers or Golden State get in the playoffs? Because they're at 9-10.
Mm-hmm.
2 losses behind Phoenix and Sacramento. That would be the entire talk of the NBA world, is can the Lakers or Golden State actually get into the playoffs? Now they're essentially assured a play-in game after Houston's lost 2 in a row. They've fallen back a little bit from Golden State. But give Golden State credit. They were on the ropes with Houston right on their heels. And now what have they done? 5 straight, including last night against Dallas. And that, my friends, is why as much as they've struggled, they know how to win the important games. And that's another – them and the cool thing is you're not going to get them both. If the standings stay like this, one of them's done.
That's crazy.
One of them's out. Whoever, I mean, think about that game in L.A. Steph on the road against LeBron, losers done. That's exciting.
That is fun for me.
The West play-in games could be awesome.
Could be really good. Really good.
Could be really, really awesome. So, Thunder tonight in Boston, you hear it right here. 5 o'clock pregame, 6:30 for the tip. Hanging out here on a Wednesday. Don't forget our buddies at Superior Lawns. It's got some good chances for rain coming up through the weekend into next week. I heard Jimmy say, so if it doesn't happen, it's Jimmy's fault.
Man, but I keep checking that forecast.
I don't see rain either, but Jimmy said there's great chances for rain starting Saturday through basically every day next week. So what does that mean? Today would be a perfect day to get your lawn sprayed with insecticides, grubs, insects, or even some fertilizer. It's fertilizer down before it rains. It's going to warm up. We all know it's going to warm up in April. Get that green grass popping with the granular application programs offered by Superior Lawns. It's our man Scott Kelly at 580-799-5670. Superior Lawns. Hanging out in Elk City, Canute, Cheyenne, and Sayre. Okay, Jared. NCAA tournament ratings are all the rage right now within the sports media complex. The men's tournament is doing numbers that it hasn't done in a long time, early on at least, maybe even ever. And the women's tournament is doing numbers that it flat out has never done. Over the weekend, did you see which men's game outdrew drew the most viewers?
This past weekend?
This past weekend, Sweet 16 / Elite 8 weekend. Did you see the number one rated game from a TV standpoint?
I always go to the Blue Blood, so I'll say the one of the Duke games.
It was North Carolina State and Duke.
Okay.
Drew.
I almost did that one first, but I just.
North Carolina State and Duke was like 15 million, 15.3 million. We knew LSU, or we thought LSU, Iowa on the women's side might be doing some pretty good ratings. Came out yesterday, 12.3 million. That is by far and away the highest rated women's game of all time. That leads me to, what do you think a number could be possible for the women's title game if it's Caitlin Clark against South Carolina?
What was the number, the one you just said?
12.3 million. Could it get to 20? I think that may be a little bridge too far, but maybe 20, 18? Where do you think it could get to?
I will kind of go in between. I'll say around 13.5, 14.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over.
You're going over?
Yeah. I think you add more because it'll be a Sunday. Sunday's a good TV watching day, Sunday evening.
Is it evening? They did it afternoon last year.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, maybe they have to do it afternoon to get it on ABC.
Yeah. No, Man, 20? That's a lot. For that scenario. But you'd have to have that scenario. South Carolina going for the undefeated. But, again, I question, now that LSU is out, we saw that rematch that the nation was waiting on since it happened last year. How much can Clark carry the rest of those viewers?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, which is not a bad time slot. I mean, you just mentioned that Duke game. That was a Sunday afternoon game. I'm going to say north of 15. I'm not trying to poo-poo on the women's game.
Well,
I just think, I don't know, and especially if it's not South Carolina.
No. It won't be. If it's, listen, it has to be these two forces meeting.
To use that. You're not asking just a championship game. You're asking if it's Iowa, South Carolina.
It has to be Iowa, South Carolina to do the numbers we're talking about. If it's UConn, South Carolina, uh-uh. If it's UConn, NC State, uh-uh. If it's Caitlin and NC State, it might approach what that LSU game did. But in order to get those, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, everyone, you know, you just, oh, the women's tournament's bigger than the men's. No, it's not. Even this, the almost all-time biggest rating in the history of women's basketball, is still over 3 million shy of an Elite Eight game between North Carolina State and Duke. But that's okay. I mean, that's okay. These numbers are dwarfing anything that it's ever done.
Right. That's what you just said. That's what's cool, is that these numbers are growing for both men and women. But for women, it's the women's tournament, it's growing, and that's what's cool. And that's what I said, was that yesterday, was will the numbers continue to grow to next year? It might plateau a little bit because of the lack of star power, but you're going to get some residual. You're going to get some people who – were turned on to this sport because of that game on Monday night.
Yeah.
And are going to hang out and watch.
And because of her. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. She is a huge part of this.
Someone who's never had any affiliation with anybody go, you know what? I like that that Iowa team. I'm going to continue to root for them no matter what. Or LSU. I like that feisty coach. Mm-hmm. I'm going to root for her.
I hope it happens because I want to see what the number does. I think it's north of 15 million, maybe not to 20, settling in at somewhere. So that the women are shattering their own records, and will continue to do so as long as Caitlin Clark is involved. Now, let's go to the men's side.
Here's a final thought on the women's. The NCAA has got to quit embarrassing themselves with the the officiating issue they had a few weeks ago.
The three-point line's not being the same.
The three-point line a couple years ago where the discrepancy of the weight rooms and the facilities and stuff like that, it wasn't up. All this little things like that keep coming to light. Come on, NCAA. It's the three-point line and the officiating thing. What are we doing?
Well, it goes back to
what are we doing?
The women's tournament generates a minuscule amount of revenue.
They need more money to make sure the 3-point line not.
But I'm just saying, as far as equitable, as soon as the revenue is,
they can't do a background check. You can't afford a background check on who got their degree from where and who where you're assigning these officials.
You would think.
Come on, NCAA.
But here's the point, and it's well made by what you're saying, people getting to the game. That's probably happened forever, and nobody gave a rip because it was the women's turn. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's just the brutal honesty of it. Mm-hmm. And now that it's becoming more in the forefront in American sports, some of these things start to happen. Somebody starts to investigate this. You know what I mean? I mean, people pay more attention to it because of the attention that it's drawn.
That is scary. And it's scary to think, well, how many other times was an official officiating their alma mater? Or how many other times was a three-point line off?
I mean, think about that. I mean, it was that obvious when you looked at it. But think, do you ever even pay attention to that? I mean, you kind of looked and went, the floor looks weird. Like, but could you tell why? Unless you just went out there and measured it.
Yeah. Somebody said, you need to measure that? Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
All right, on the men's side, it's been the early rounds, at least, have been ratings bonanza, and 15.4 for NC State and Duke. It's a huge number for the Elite Eight. I came across a list of the highest rated finals. It's just the finals. So it's not like it's tournament games, not like it's semifinals, just the highest rated finals of all time. Any idea what number one on this list is?
All time?
All time highest rated NCAA tournament final game.
Oh, boy. All time. How about, I got the list in front of me, but not the ratings list.
Yeah, just I was going to say, that would be cheating.
I'm not
Jared,
cheating. I just got the past championship matchups. Again, I'll go back to Blue Blood. So, Kentucky, Kansas in 2012.
Okay, it's interesting you said that. That's not it. Okay. That's not it.
I would have no clue. Maybe, I don't know, man. I mean, you got to think about how popular the sport has grown since even the 80s.
Yeah. See, you're wrong about that. That's the whole point.
Is the Larry Bird and Magic Johnson final?
It's Larry Bird and Magic Johnson in 1979. Michigan State, Indiana State, 24.1. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think is
there hasn't been more?
No. What do you think is the most recent final that's a top 10 rated game of all time? See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The most recent one that makes the top 10. Yeah, 1994.
Wow.
Arkansas versus Duke, 1994. This is why it is so fascinating to me that these numbers have been so huge for the men's tournament this year. Because college basketball is way past its prime.
Yeah.
Past its prime. Yeah. 1994, you know who played? Arkansas and Duke. You know who was on that Duke team? Grant Hill. Everybody knew Grant Hill because as a freshman, he was out there in that upset of UNLV the year after Duke just got obliterated by the Rebels in the finals. But you got to know him and that Duke squad that he was, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They were there year after year after year with the same players. And it's no surprise to me, even though it does seem like things become more popular, college basketball and Major League Baseball are the things that peaked in the mid-90s. You know what I'm saying? And then everything else has kind of gotten a little bit better. But what's interesting about those numbers on these games with North Carolina State and Duke, Iowa and LSU, all of it has outdrew any NBA Finals game for years. But we hear how popular the NBA is. All you got to do is listen to the media. They'll tell you how it's never been more popular. Really? Mm. So the NCAA tournament has been on a decline for years, and now it's outdrawing finals games? Isn't that weird? Yeah, so the list is Bird Magic in 79, Georgetown and Villanova in 1985 is number two, Duke Michigan in 1992, NC State Houston, 1983. North Carolina Michigan, 1993 is number five. That Arkansas Duke game from 1994 is number six. 1982, the Michael Jordan year, UNC and Georgetown is seven. The one that I don't even, if I thought about it, I remember they played, but this one was shocking to me. Number eight is Michigan Seton Hall in 1989. That just shows you how popular college basketball was then. UCLA, Kentucky in 1975, and Louisville and Duke in 1986. If you're wondering, I asked this question to a couple people. Well, they said, what about OU Kansas? 20.7 was that 1986 game. OU Kansas drew like 19.7 or 19.4 or something like that in 1988, the final between the Sooners and Kansas. So I just, when I saw that list, I immediately thought, man, this is so contradictory, because everything tells you, if you look at the top 10, college basketball is way declining in popularity. And it has. There's no doubt about that since its heyday through the 80s and the 90s. But also, all of a sudden, why is it making some sort of resurgence? And is it because, as much as people are sick of transfer portal and NIL and that kind of thing, are they even more sick of what's happening in the NBA with LeBron and the wokeness of Steve Kerr, Greg Pop? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It just turns people completely off more than even the transfer portal and NIL does.
Yeah, and maybe it's such an interesting study. Maybe when you're not as attached to teams, you know, I mentioned this earlier in the tournament, no attachment to any team in this tournament, which one, made it easy to pick, two, made it easy to just to be a fan and watch. But even with teams that are in, like with fans that have teams in it, well, when they lose, it's not, well, turn off the TV, I'm done with this because my team lost. Like, well, those guys are only here for a year. I'm not really emotionally attached to these guys. I can continue to watch this and enjoy it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, maybe. You know, you'd think it'd be the other way, but the numbers are proven maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I have found, I'm guilty of this, I have found when my team's in it, and if they lose in the second round, I get my interest level goes down. Maybe I'm bitter. Maybe I'm immature. I don't know. Call it what you will, but that's why this year has just been so much more interesting for me, because I don't have a team in it. But maybe because, and even if they may say OU was in it and we got these one-year dudes who are exiting the team already as we speak, which I knew was coming, which I never got emotionally attached to these guys because I thought, well, you're not going to be here next year.
Well, so, nobody is.
No, but yeah.
Duke was the only team in the Elite Eight
that had a little experience coming back.
Well, that had five guys that had never been to the portal.
Yeah,
NC State's whole starting five played at different schools. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, yeah, I see people going, what is wrong with OU and Mosier? Everybody's doing it.
But that's what I'm getting.
Which is
at,
why it's so weird that these numbers are doing this. So here's a question. Is there any chance that if it's Purdue, UConn, could it bust into this top 10?
It seems like it has a lot of momentum that it could.
So that NC State Duke, 15.4, and it'd have to get to 20.7.
What's even more wild about that number is that was on Easter Sunday.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a bunch of watch parties happening with families? Or, you know, on a normal Sunday, I could see that being a thing because people are having a bunch of watch parties and the momentum, like mm-hmm. I just said. But because it was Easter Sunday, people are like, I turn the TV off. It's family time, you know. But maybe everyone was eating Easter dinner and said, turn the TV on. Let's watch that game.
Right.
I don't know. It's crazy to me.
I don't think it gets there. It might get, you know, once again, like we talked about the women, 15 to 18. This one might get, you know, 16 to 18 or 9. I don't think it can crack into that top 10.
What if this run with NC State continues? Is there people go, man, let's see if they can finish this thing off.
Maybe.
I don't care who it is. I've already told my wife, that Monday night I'm watching this game. Don't bother me. I don't care who it is.
Yeah, it's that interesting study because last year's Final Four was one of the worst rated of all time.
Yeah.
It showed that at the end, people don't care about Cinderella. They want the big dogs.
Right.
The biggest dogs on the block right now is Purdue and UConn.
Yeah.
And you would think that would generate the highest numbers. But maybe that attachment back to Valvano and the 83 NC State does make a little bit of a difference.
I wonder if I don't care who's in it. I just want to watch it because it's been such a fun tournament for me, obviously. But and then again, I'm not attached. I've been enjoyed. I don't think I've been this entertained from a tournament every single weekend like I have this year. There's been so many entertaining games, at least one of them, that I've watched every single session.
Right.
It's been a lot of fun.
So if you're looking for somewhere to go on Saturday to watch these games, even Friday night, go watch Iowa and UConn. You want pizza, pasta, burgers, sandwiches. It doesn't make any difference. Go to the Boomtown Grill. Boomtown is your March Madness headquarters. They've got 12 big screen TVs, full service bar, happy hour 2 to 6 Monday through Friday. Also appetizer plates and drink specials, 11 beers on tap, 30 bottles and cans available, imports and domestics, large wine selection. Boomtown is open 7 days a week, 11 to 10 Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 11 on Friday and Saturday. Visit Boomtown Grill, 2103 South Main, right here in Elk City. Whoa, Jared, what happened?
You're right there.
Like my throat just went like closed.
Man.
It's like when your knee gives out, when you're walking out of nowhere.
Unfortunately, that's happening more often
in
our
old
age. Yeah.
That just happened to my voice. So the Elk City Fire Department is having a golf tournament Thursday, May the 23rd, right here at Elk City Golf and Country Club. I think they have full teams, but they could still use hole sponsors. And probably get on a waiting list or something available as well if you wanted to try to play in that thing. Sign up, contact Alex Northcott at 405-417-1591 or the fire department, 580-225-0500. Our friends at McDonald's doing a bunch of stuff with this. Phillips family there at McDonald's, Clinton, Weatherford, and Elk City are sponsoring this thing, putting it on with the fire department. So they could, obviously, everything that's happened over the last month fire-wise, you know, everything gets depleted pretty quickly when something like that happens. So support the fire department here in Elk City by, you know, just throwing them a little cash.
Yeah.
All right, Jared, do you believe there's any chance in the world that Joe Harris, the president of the University of Oklahoma, would move Sooner basketball to a place not named Norman? Because that's exactly what he threatened the Norman City Council with yesterday if they do not agree to move forward with the billion-dollar entertainment district / new arena for OU basketball.
I don't know if there's a lot of teeth to that, but it's admirable for pulling that one out of the quiver and trying to use it. I don't think it's likely. But I love what he's doing. I love what he's saying.
You know, on the surface of it, you're thinking, okay, move him out. I mean, he could literally be meaning like a foot into Moore, which would still be pretty, you know, adjacent to Norman. But, I mean, if he's looking for places, I've got a great idea.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I know right where about a 15-year arena that would hold everybody that goes and watches those games. It's right down Pioneer here.
Here's the problem.
2,500, that normally fits enough to for the people to go watch OU basketball.
He also said the arena would also be the home of some national championship gymnastics teams, which probably pull in a lot more fans than the basketball teams do right now.
You know, kids play gymnastics here in Elk City too, Jared.
I know.
And if this is too far a drive, Tuttle's Arena is pretty nice. Washington's is my favorite of anywhere because we can just wheel our equipment right. We don't have to step up any steps at Washington. We don't have to. I don't have to lug that giant box of stuff. I don't have to go up any stairs. Just wheel it right over to our broadcast location, set it up, and boom. It's not as big as the Pioneer Center. Tuttle's nice. Blanchard's nice. These things are already built. I mean, I get what you're saying as far as, you know, you try to hold your feet to the fire. It just reminds you of one of those, like what happened in Kansas City last night. Trying to get the voters to approve taxpayer dollars to go toward, you know, renovations for Royals Chiefs got voted down. That's essentially what he's trying to do. Create that momentum from taxpayers in the city of Norman to start leaning on the city council people to approve this thing.
It's in the same vein of how the voters in Oklahoma City approved the new arena, and there was that talk, if this isn't approved, then the Thunder might look to move. And that's kind of obviously you can't move the entire university, but it is a possibility, and I don't know of any other university arenas that are off campus in other communities. I'm sure there are some. So there are arenas that are shared and stuff like that. But as far as Norman's concerned, where would he go? Moore?
Yeah, I know.
Would Moore go, yeah, come up here. We'll get this TIF district approved, and we'd love an entertainment place right across the street from the Warren Theater or something like that. I don't know. But I like the move, and I certainly hope it gets done because the basketball programs need it. And it'd be perfect to – this probably should have got done a couple years ago to get this thing going and maybe be ready by the time you're playing SEC basketball. You can really show it off when these SEC teams come to town.
You know, something interesting that I heard Kerry say, I think, when I was driving to work this morning. You know, when Oklahoma played Kansas for the title in 1988, Lloyd Noble Center was 13 years old. That seems like a long time ago.
There's a couple 40. Renovations since. I mean, they're trying
to keep it relevant,
but I mean, it's served its purpose. It's done. I personally would love to see an on-campus facility. Not sure how feasible that is. I don't know where you'd go with that. They'd have to acquire more land, and all the land they've acquired, they've added on to the football facilities with the living facilities and all that, Harrington and all that. I've thought, why not go directly east onto, you know, and relocate the track and field department and have it right next to the arena, to the football stadium. But then you got to question, you know, well, where's everybody going to park and all this stuff.
Right, and it's more of a – it's not just an arena. It's the entertainment type district that they're trying to get done.
That's what they're trying to do. But the idea to have something on campus, you get your students more involved. Mm-hmm. They can walk over there. But we'll see what happens. As an OU fan, I want it to happen. I want to see something new.
Breaking news.
Did you see that?
NFL breaking news.
Two digs in one state.
The Bills are finalizing a trade. This is courtesy of Adam Schefter of ESPN, which, let's be honest, Schefty is the guy. Bills are finalizing a trade to send four-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans for draft pick compensation. Josh Allen's looking up there in Buffalo going, what's going on here? Gabe Davis is gone. Now Stephon Diggs is gone. It'll be interesting to see what that draft pick compensation is, but on the surface of it, without knowing that, man, does this not look like a huge win for C.J. Stroud?
Yeah, it does. That's a big weapon for him. Big weapon.
Yeah, that's It seems like it. Man, Houston, Scott, the other day, when I think when you were gone, we were talking a little NFL, and he said, I think Houston may have done the best job of anybody. you know, kind of supplementing what they need around him. And that was before this. We'll wait to see exactly what they gave up to get Diggs, but man, sure looks like that was a that's a huge move. I don't know if that gets Houston all the way into contender status. See what happens with the draft and everything, but man,
makes them better.
Yeah, it does.
Makes them way better.
This is really good, really good. Oh, here it is. Looks like a 2025 second round pick. Texans. Looking good. All right, we're going to have to talk high school baseball tomorrow. I don't know what was wrong with Cash last night. Four innings, only nine strikeouts. Three guys got themselves out by hitting it to him. Unacceptable. Teasing.
Really needs to pick it up.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Those people flying in to see him are disappointed.
We got to have balls in play for outs. Everybody have a great day.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.